Quiero estar. Está blanco. Чем мы раскрыли? Мы раскрыли войны. Relax your face. Forehead. Eyelids. The corners of your mouth. And bring your mind to your breath. You ask your heart teacher to come. I like to picture them in front of me. And I try to make them alive and not a photograph, so I can feel the warmth of their body and can smell the fragrance of their skin and see their eyes moving and blinking. And most of all, feel the comfort of having your teacher in your presence. Bow down to your teacher by thinking about one quality that they have that you would like to have, and admiring the quality. That's a real namaste. Like an offering to your teacher, something sweet you've done for somebody else. Now tell your teacher the most negative thing you've done in the last 24 hours. Maybe it was just a thought towards somebody. And make some kind of commitment to try not to do it again today. Then think of the nicest thing you've done. Could be recently or could be long before. Think of something you're really proud of. Maybe it's trying to get along with someone that you have trouble getting along with. Think of the sweetest thing you've seen someone else do. Maybe here at the camp since you got here. You take pleasure in that. think again about that goal we talked about yesterday. Something, the main thing that you would like to do with your life, the main dream or hope that you have, what you would like to be or become in your life. And ask your teacher to help you, guide you, become that thing. And I think most importantly, try to get a clear picture of what you would be like afterwards, after you achieve that goal. Try to envision what you would look like, what you would be like. And ask your teacher to guide you, stay with you all day, all night. Then come back to your breath. Try to keep the mind sliding against the breath. Try not to think of anything else. Then we'll start into a deeper meditation. Keep your mind on your breath. Try not to move. Separated part of your mind off of the main mind. Let that part of your mind step back, away from the mind, and watch the mind, watch the main mind thinking its thoughts. Don't try to control the thoughts, just watch them. Watch the mind as the subject, watching the thoughts as the object. See where your mind is at this moment. Now put up the wall in front of your mind. Clear wall. It stops any thoughts about the future. Keeps you here in this room. Try not to move. Block any thoughts of the past. Put a crystal wall behind your mind. No thoughts of the past. The only place to go now is in this room, in this present moment, in this day, with the people here. Relax into the present day, present moment, this morning. Feel the relief of surrendering into the present, not worrying about the past or the future. Try not to move. Stay here in the present. When you move, it means you're thinking of something, how you feel after you move. That's the future. and ask your Lama to come into your heart. Slowly open your eyes. Stretch. That was good. That was good. I think you got some sleep. It'll get better. So we're still reviewing. Today we'll review, this morning we'll review class 4. And in the afternoon we'll review class 5. And then in the evening we'll start the new stuff, which for me is more fun. But I think it's good that we review. So I'm just going to go through the homework for the fourth class, which we already did it too. So, the first question was about motivation. That is called Gunung Chepa Sekundo. Chepa. Kuno means your motivation to do anything. Chepa means to fix or to repair something. But I feel like that's sort of a negative. You know, to say that you have to start by repairing your motivation, I feel like strange. I think it should just be more, you want to set a good motivation, you know? So I don't think you have to translate it as repair. I think it could be just a second motivation. And it's easy. I think, you know, in my own context, I think for most of you who've taken some courses, or who've been taking courses for 4 years, for me, it doesn't take any great leap of imagination to imagine how I'm going to use this stuff. You know what I mean? It's not difficult for me to imagine changing the world or making an enlightened world. I mean, we're already very actively doing it, maybe too active. Not enough sleep, too many airports. Sometimes we can't remember what country we're in, like Nemo will turn to me and say, what country are we in? You know, I'm like, what day of the week is it? You know, and, but it's, we have a very sweet karma. It's not a big leap to have some bodhicitta motivation and think, oh, I'm going to save the world with this thing. Or I could help a lot of people in the world. We already are. You know, many, many countries. And many more are waiting. We have many, many invitations. We need you. We need more help. We need more people. And it's a lot of fun. You can't imagine how much fun it is. You know, to like walk through. Go for an hour to find a croissant in Paris, and then the next day you're in Ukraine looking at, you're in a 1,000-year-old church looking for icons for your grandmother or something, and it's a beautiful life. So I don't think it's difficult to imagine that as you take these teachings about the Lam Rim, that you could fairly quickly turn them around and start serving people wherever you are in the world. That the world is a small place now, with the internet and airplanes. Bodhicitta is not such a difficult thing to imagine helping the whole world. You can. And the information here is unique, you know, it's special. I go to Doubleday. Doubleday's one of my publishers. And we have meetings, you know, in their big offices, was it 57th Street and 8th Avenue, 7th Avenue, 6th Avenue, anyway. And we're way up in the sky, and we're sitting there, and the guy, you know, he says, well, okay, what new ideas do you have for a book, you know? And I'll say, oh, I'm thinking about writing a better book than Stephen Hawking, you know, correcting Stephen Hawking. And then he's like, okay, and then, you know, and then he says, and then I have like 8 other ideas, and then he says, okay, let's do all of them, you know? And he says, he gets 1,500 manuscripts a week. He chooses one. He did the Pope's book, he did Mother Teresa's book. And he's like, you guys have content. You know, you guys have something valuable, and anything you want to print, we'll print. You know, and it's like what you're learning here is something really valuable for people. And I'm saying outside of the Buddhist context, okay? Like, I'm very careful. The DCI thing is we don't even mention Buddhism, and I don't think there's any need to. It's not in my interest to make sure everybody has a picture of a certain 6-armed blue guy on their wall. It doesn't matter to me. I don't know if it's even helpful. You know, if you meet a 6-armed blue guy, that's okay. But I don't have any interest to see the paraphernalia spread in the world. That's cultural. You know, it's not the same in India as Tibet or China or Japan. It's all different. It's just, that's just cultural stuff. The ideas can be used by Russian mafiosos and anybody, you know, and just be more successful and make a better world. So it's not difficult, I think. The first question in the homework is, what's the motivation with which you should come to this teaching? And I think in the back of your mind, you should see yourself, you know, like Amin came on her first tour. You know, she was nervous the first day. And then by the end, she's like surrounded by a crowd of, you know, Ukrainians, and they're asking her questions about how to plant seeds, and she flowered herself in the experience. And on the tour, big groups of people just start forming around. You can't walk through the hallways, and just people crowd around you and ask you beautiful questions, and you can help their life. And so I don't think it's difficult as you sit here to imagine yourself like me, going on a tour or starting, like Jeff just showed up from Detroit, and now he's running the whole thing in Phoenix. So stuff like that. It's not difficult to imagine yourself doing that in your own way, okay? According to your own life, what availability you have. Prabhupada Vijay says, how do we deal with the lesser motivations that come up? You know, like when you, Kunlong Tripa, when you sit down in the class in the morning and you think, why am I here? Then some miscellaneous motivations will come up. You know, I heard the food was really good. I just wanted to get out in the pines away from Phoenix and, you know, walk around and less than 110 degree temperature, you know, or I needed a break from the airports and my Facebook page, and, you know, I just wanted a couple days off, you know. Then Prabhupada Rinpoche says, latch on to those lower motivations, you know, say, okay, what do you call it, connect with your lower motivation. Okay, I just wanted to get away from pollution, and I wanted to be in the pines for 10 days, you know? And then he says, follow that motivation to its logical end, okay? So then you say, okay, what do you mean? Say, well, okay, I'll spend my 10 days in the pines. Then I'll have to go back to, what's that movie, Back to Reality? The kid who spits the whole, he takes over the house for a week. The parents leave him.
Home alone.
Yeah, and the last line of the movie is Back to Reality. You know, back to all the screaming family. And then you gotta go back. to your screaming family. Then how many trips to the Pines can we make in one lifetime? You know, this course itself, you know, I used to tell people at Diamond Mountain, you know, this is going to end one day. And they're all like, yeah, you know. And then, we're going to reach the last page of the Tantra teachings, and then that's it. You're going to have to get a job. And they're all like, they say, no, this will go forever. And no, it finishes. And this too shall pass. This 10 years sounds like a long time. It's not a long time. You'll be looking back and say, I was on the first tour to Bulgaria, you know, back in the 2011, you know? And, you know, then the Bulgarians will be sending yoga teachers here. And everything passes. So then what? You know, you will come to your last Lam Rim, Namgyal Lakchang, Gift of Liberation class. And you will make your last trip to the Pines. You know, and then there'll come a day when you know, I have this old lady I take care of, right? And we are in heavy negotiations to take away her car. Because she's in 6 accidents this year. You know, and we're afraid she's going to kill somebody. And then she's so intent on not giving up her freedom. And she can't, she's a very compassionate person, but she can't really grasp that she could kill somebody. And she almost has. You know, and then, but she's so intent on her freedom and her life, you know. And then it got down to a couple of weeks ago that before the judge, we had to go before the judge to decide whether she should keep her license, you know. And she's like, you're all going to support me, right? And we're all like, yeah, you know. Then we wrote a note to the judge that said, don't believe anything we say, because take away her license, please, you know. And then we slipped it to him, you know, and he's like, reading in, and we're like, she's a good driver. Sorry, because she'll hate us for the rest of her life. So we had to do that. Then the judge chickened out. And he didn't want her to hate him either. But it'll come for us too, you see? It'll come for us. You won't be able to get to Friendly Pines again. You won't be able to get here. You see, I can't leave. I my walker won't work on the... No, don't leave. They're going to be here. It's going to happen. Now you're laughing like those people at Diamond Mountain, you know, who said that it'll never end. You know, it doesn't. So any lower motivation you could have, follow its logical consequences to the last trip to Friendly Pines to get away from the pollution in Phoenix and whatever. See what I mean? And then you'll end up at the right motivation anyway. You see? It's cool. You can't escape the right motivation. Just follow the logical things, you know? I'm gonna make my last trip. I get old. I gotta do something about it. And I gotta help other people do something about it. Because I don't want to see Mrs. Hancock, you know, live like that. And then the whole motivation gets twisted back to the what it was supposed to be. Okay? It's automatic. You can't escape it. Follow the logical consequences of the desire to serve your own small pleasures, and you will reach bodhicitta. Because there's nowhere else to go. Got it? That's beautiful. All right. Then he goes into... He's going to start talking about the Lam Rim as a kind of spiritual path. And then he says, what are 3 things you should look for in a spiritual path? Okay? And the first one is you should look at who founded it. You see, who founded this path? You see? In our case, it's the Buddha, okay? Lord Buddha. And then you try to get to know more about the founder of the path. Because then you can establish whether you're going to buy it or not. You see, so establishing the authenticity of the founder is important. You know, is the founder someone who's going to stand up to scrutiny over a long period of time? Like His Holiness. You know, like he stands up to scrutiny very nicely. You know, and the way he lives is good. What he's teaching me. What he's teaching is good. You know, his whole life is an example. And then you're not making excuses for the founder of your path or something like that. It's a good path. It was founded by someone for real. You know? And in the case of the Buddha, I mean, most people don't know much about the Buddha. The historical information is a little... It's as if you just had the stories about Jesus's childhood exploits, but none of the New Testament. You see what I mean? Like, people are not aware of the teachings of the Buddha. They know that he was... They know about the movies, like, what's his name? Little Buddha. And but they don't know what he taught. They don't know much about what he taught. And but the more you learn, the more you love the founder of the path, the more you study what the Buddha said. He taught for 51 years. He taught 1,500 sutras and tantras. And they are extraordinary. Every page of every one is extraordinary. And then you start to feel, oh, this is special. This is a special path. So the founder was great. Then in the interim, between then and now, 30 years ago or something, during that time, the people have passed it on sweetly. Okay? People have passed it on responsibly. And it's good. I mean, you can pick up this scripture, which was written in the 1920s, and you can pick up a sutra from 500 BC, and they read the same. It's like Wednesday's edition of the New York Times versus Tuesday's edition of the New York Times. It's not any different than that. It's extraordinary. The language, if you can read this book, you can read all of the Buddha's own teachings, because it hasn't changed. Even the language hasn't changed. In the debate in the monasteries, if you could hear what they're saying, they're like, thou art wrong, because thou dost believe. You know, and there's even debate in the ancient language. So it hasn't changed. It's been kept very pure. And in fact, with this Buddhist path, I don't even like to say Buddhist anymore, this particular path, it has been refined in every generation. Rather than getting more, what do you call it?
Corrupt.
Usually it corrupts. You know, you do that thing where I whisper something to Akash, and then he whispers it to Anjana, and then by the time it gets over to here, it's like Geshe Michael's a schmuck. And it's not like that. In this particular lineage, which we'll talk about later, they're so careful about how they pass on a transmission that it has become more refined. It has become more clear and more sweet the more time has gone by. The Buddha spoke in very cryptic words because his audience was more intelligent. He didn't have to. They could memorize what he said on the spot. The Heart Sutra wasn't written down for generations. So his own words are difficult. They're decipherable, but they're difficult to decipher. And then each generation, up to Ken Rinpoche, who's the third lama from the left, he's my direct teacher, then up to him, it has been clarified more and more sweetly, more and more. You know, each lama has taken it to their own generation. So we're not allowed to change the information. You can't say there's seven perfections or three noble truths or something. But you present it in your own world. And in this tradition, it's considered a corruption not to present it in modern terms. You see? If I try to force you to learn it the way it's taught in a Tibetan monastery, it would corrupt it. Because you wouldn't get it, and you wouldn't appreciate it. It wouldn't feel beautiful to you. If I forced you to, like, do syllogisms with me all day, then you would tire, and you would leave it. And then it's more pure, and it's more accurate if you update it to your present times, you know? You gotta talk about Harry Meets Sally. Or, see, my movies are so new you don't even know them. Waiting for Forever. 2011.
Yeah.
No, and then it's your responsibility when you teach your students in even more obscure Eastern European cities that you will have to pull out the movies from 2015 or the movies from 2020, and you can't freeze it, you see? Freezing is corruption. That's interesting. It has stayed living, but precise. Precise and living. It has changed with each generation. The language, the presentation has stayed modern. And the information has stayed the original information. So you have, that's your challenge. You know, as you teach in a YMCA in LA in Spanish to your yoga students, you gotta be hip. And you gotta be up to date. And you gotta, you know, present it to them in their own way. But the information hasn't changed. So in it, the second requirement of a good spiritual path is that it's current, but it's ancient. My boss used to say in the jewelry business, you know, Mike, the best advertisements. I said, what? He said, put contradictions in the advertising. For some reason, people love it. You know, like modern traditional. You know, and people buy more. Because half the people want traditional, half the people want modern. So you don't say modern line or traditional line, you say modern traditional. And that's what we got here. This is updated ancient. All right. Number three. There should be real examples of people who used that path and got some cool stuff happen to them. Okay? All right? Which puts pressure on the elder students here. Okay? Like, if there's nothing special about you, you go to, I don't know, Cali, Colombia, or somewhere new that are waiting for us. Bogota also Medellin. Three cities in Colombia are waiting. We don't have enough staff to send in. So you go there and you present something. They're going to look at you, and they're going to say, "Do I want to be?" You know, you're going to say, "I've been doing this for 15 years," and you're like, your hands are shaking and you hold your coffee cup. And they're like, yeah, it's okay. Maybe I'll try something else. You know what I mean? Like, very reasonably, people want to see if anything magical happened to you. And if it didn't, then they'll say, no thanks, I'll try something else. You know? And it should be that way. So a path should, the third requirement of a nice spiritual path is that people have tried it. And people have gotten results from it. The big selling point for the Lama Rim, one of the big selling points, although it doesn't make as much impact in a country where people don't worry much about their future life, is that you can reach enlightenment in one lifetime. You can try to imagine the universe. Try to imagine billions and billions of stars and billions of planets. And normally, to become an enlightened being, to evolve into an enlightened being, it takes visits to billions of those planets. It takes many lifetimes of evolution on countless planets to become a Buddha. I mean, try to sometime go out and look at the stars. I heard that in a visible quarter inch of stars, there are trillions of stars that we can't see. But just imagine, the normal journey to enlightenment requires lifetimes spent on billions of the stars you see in the sky. If you study the Lam Rim, if you learn it, you can do it in one lifetime, here in Friendly Pines. Okay, all right? And it's not unreasonable, and it's not impossible. Okay. What's it feel like when you get close? What's it feel like when you get close? I mean, then you start talking Vajrayana, which means diamond way, or it means secret teachings. You can say Tantra. I don't like the word Tantra, because even in Bulgaria there's magazines about Tantra, and it's not Tantra. But it means secret teachings. So what makes them secret? Secret means you do your Lam Rim you meditate nicely, you relax, you help out in the kitchen, you do your yoga almost every day, you do your 5 times boat, and then I lost mine, okay? I'm on the plane. They're looking for it. Ukrainian international is looking for mine. Anyway. So, you just do your practices sweetly, calmly, as well as you can. No, traumas. Or beating, I'm not good enough, I didn't do my 6 times, you know. Just relax, do your practices mildly, sweetly, semi-regularly. And then tantra happens to you. How does it happen to you? You're sitting in your discussion room, and you know you're having a problem with your boyfriend, but you don't want to say anything because it's kind of an embarrassing problem. And then the person next to you says, "I have a problem with my boyfriend," you know, and you're like, "Wow." And then they say, you know, like, "I want him to kiss me, but he won't kiss me. Even if he kisses me, he just gives me a peck on the cheek thing." And, you know, I was kind of hoping for some slobber. And then you're like, that's exactly the question I wanted to ask, you know? And then you're like, you start getting suspicious of this person next to you. Like, you know, that's kind of weird. Then the next time you sit with them at dinner and they're like, "I hate tofu, don't you?" And you're like, "Yeah, I didn't want to say it, you know. And, you know, how can we sneak the coffee into this place?" By the way, I got mine coming, all right? But it smells too good. I'm working on that. Then this person keeps saying all the things you're thinking, you know. And then that's tantra, okay? Tantra is not like cutting chicken's heads off with a fork. It's you're sitting next to somebody and you think, you have this flash, this is so common. This lady from, you know, Guadalajara sitting next to me is so common. And then you're already into tantra. You're already getting into, then you are close to enlightenment. Here at Friends and Pipes. Okay? With this lover. Alright. I think we do another meditation. I like to talk too much. I keep imagining Mama Christine here, you know, saying, "Why don't we meditate a little bit next to my phone?" All right. Okay, close your eyes. Breathe deeply. Slightly tighten your stomach, your abdomen, especially lower abdomen. Don't make a big effort, but just sort of find a line of balance where there's a slight tension in the lower stomach and in lower abdomen, and it loosens the muscles of the lower spine. Now I'd like you to put your mind into the middle of the Muladhara Chakra. Muladhara Chakra is a like a knot, which is at the place where your legs meet, in your perineum, in your groin. Go, put your mind to the place where your legs meet, and then put your mind about an inch into your body from that point. Try to focus your mind there. You don't have to do anything special or mystical, just try to keep your mind there, gently, softly. See if you can feel some kind of a center there. This center, which you can almost feel it like a small ball, is actually a knot. Certain channels are twisted here, forming a knot. And what we're going to try is to open that knot slightly. That knot is responsible for feeling tired, getting older, not having the energy that you would like to have. It's also responsible for not being able to achieve the things you want in your life. The knots along the spine in the body, which are called chakras, are responsible for not feeling energy, not feeling youthful, vigor. And they're also responsible for not having the willpower or the discipline to do the things we would like to do. So we're going to try to subvert those knots. We're going to take the mind inside of that chakra. So now imagine that the little ball you feel, or imagine a ball, you're going deeper inside the ball to the middle of the chakra. Put your mind there in the middle of the chakra, between your legs, about an inch into the body. It's important not to go back towards the anus, then that will cause some problems with your poo-poo. You have to stay towards the front of the place between your legs, into the body, but not as far back as your anus. Try to focus the mind inside that chakra. Try comfortably, sweetly, try to keep it there. The longer you can keep it there, the more prana will collect there, and the more energy you will feel during the day. Now I'd like you to imagine a special kind of prana there in the middle of that ball. Like those geodes where it's like a ball of stone and then inside there's crystals. So inside the ball, almost like a stone, I'd like you to picture this beautiful crystalline, clear like water, but crystalline like glass, and it's a liquid, or it's between a liquid and air, but it's crystalline, and it's a tiny, tiny amount trying to crack through the chakra, move up and down through the chakra, like a vein of crystals through a stone. Just imagine a tiny, tiny flow trying to crack through the chakra of liquid glass. Keep your mind lightly on that liquid glass. Your mind will wander. Bring it back calmly, carefully. Don't stress, don't strain. Think about lunch. Think about your laptop, and then slowly come back to the liquid glass. Try not to move. And slowly come back to your breath. And release the meditation. You can open your eyes. Stretch. So, Prabhupada begins to discuss where did the teaching of the Lama come from? Okay, like when did Lama start? And those of you who've been, you know, consorting with Buddhists for a while, you kind of get this impression that Lama started with Tsongkhapa. Tsongkhapa wrote the Lama Chemo, the great Lama, very famous, 1,000 pages about Lamen, and then you will come to know, you will come to learn in this week the story of Atishev, Lord Atishev, who brought the Lamen to Tibet. Two amazing
you know, what do you call it? Swashbuckling adventures, which we're going to talk about. That's the main subject of the later part of the week. You're going to learn the whole story of how it got from India to Tibet. And in fact, how it got to India from Indonesia. We'll be going through that. So then a lot of people, they start to form this idea in their mind, okay, Lamrim was taught by... By the way, you got to know the cast of characters. On the left is Pahol Gurbache, okay, Dechen Rinpo. And you can't imagine how lucky you are to see his face. Okay, you can't imagine how lucky you are to read his teaching. Okay, it's an unbelievable being on this planet. Okay, next was Chijan Rinpoche, second from the left. And he's the disciple who wrote the text down, okay? The teacher of His Holiness, current, one of the two tutors of His Holiness, the current Dalai. I just like his face, you know? I just want to sit there and stare at his face. My mother came to India when she was dying, and I was studying near the Dalai Lama, and the Lamas taught her how to die. And she was dying. And then we got to see His Holiness. And it's beautiful time. And then she bought me this really beautiful little photo thing, you know, as His Holiness and the two tutors. And I used to just stare at it. And some Tibetan guy had painted in with watercolors because they didn't have any money. And they made color photos with watercolors. And I should just stare. I love that particular photo. So anyway, and then the next Lama is Ken Rinpoche, who looks very cheerful. just before he hits you on the head. But I guess that's what I needed at the time. But then I stayed with him for 25 years. We lived together for 25 years. Really tough, old-fashioned Lama. But Chijan Rinpoche was his heart teacher. And he met Pahol Gurbache as a young boy. Not a young boy, he was about, he met him in his teens, and he was a bad boy. My teacher was a naughty boy. He was like in the... Monasteries have gangs, okay? A Western friend of mine was stabbed in a monastery, a monk. And there are rough kids in the monastery. There are rough young men in the monastery. And then, he was really naughty. And then Pahol Gurbache came to give a similar series of teachings. It wasn't this series, but he came to Sarah to give a series of teachings. And then my Lama was supposed to be the person that ran out and got the breakfast food, and right? So it's kind of a... tradition. Where is she? Food. So people get stuck with the food end up being the big llamas later. Okay? So I guess it's some kind of karma. So my llama was the Nyerpa, means the quartermaster of the college. So he had to run out and to Prescott and get all the food and missed a lot of the teaching, and you know. And then one day he came in and Pahol Gurbache paid a surprise visit to the kitchen, right? Which happened to me with His Holiness, but that's another story. So then he saw my teacher and he came over to him and grabbed his head. You gotta help me. And he goes like that. He says, "Oh, this one's gonna be a really good one, you know? And this one looks like a good boy." And then Rinpoche said something happened to him in that moment. That Pahol Gurbache touched him, and then his whole mind changed. And then he started actually studying. Then he told his teacher, he told his house teacher, we call Gen, right? Gigan. He told his house teacher, Pavel Kurnichev touched me, now I'm going to be a Tarambo Geshe. I'm going to be a first Lama Geshe, you know? And the teacher said, when you become a Geshe, I'm going to become the Dalai Lama. And he did. He became a... He beat 10,000 monks in Tibet in 1956 or something. And he got invited to the Dalai Lama's personal quarters. The Dalai Lama was a child. He was in his early teens. And then he got the ultimate award from the Dalai Lama, which is a block of old Chinese tea. And anyway, why did I get into that?
You're describing the picture of characters.
Oh, we tend to think it all started with the Tibetans. We tend to think, that Pabang Rinpoche, we equate the Lama Rim with somebody who lived in the 1920s, or maybe Tsongkhapa who lived in the 1400s, or maybe back as far as Atisha who lived in the 1000s, right? But then Pabang Rinpoche says that's not how it started. He said the original Lama Rim is the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. Okay? So there's a huge body of literature there. I don't know. 20 volumes of scriptures that were taught by Lord Buddha called the Perfection of Wisdom. And they are extremely difficult and extremely beautiful. But they teach emptiness. Okay? They teach the subject of emptiness. We call Lewis Jujie, means their direct subject matter, explicit subject matter is emptiness. Their implicit subject matter is compassion, love. Because what are you going to do with the emptiness? You see what I mean? So you figure out that everything's coming from you. You figure out that your complaining girlfriend is coming from you. You undertake steps to change the seeds that will make her change whether she wants to or not. You change her. And you don't have any negotiations and you don't discuss anything. You save so much time. You stop complaining about people at work. And then that changes the seeds in your mind. And then she stops criticizing you. She becomes quite, you know, undemocratic. And then I mean, you can do anything if you want, but probably it'd be better to have a human being. Then that's wisdom. By making your girlfriend criticize you, stop criticizing you. You have just you have just performed in its ultimate fashion the perfection of wisdom. That's all it's for, and that's all it means. You understand she's coming from you. She's empty of coming from herself. You changed the seeds that made her criticize you, and you have just fulfilled the purpose of the Perfection of Wisdom scriptures, 20,000 pages taught by the Buddha. Because what else did you think it was for? You see what I mean? And then you change her, right? And then you start to get these ideas that maybe you could change the world that way. You see, you say, if you can work on my girlfriend, I can work on anybody. You know, I could change the whole world. I could change everybody in the world. I could stop Iraq. You know, I could fix big problems because they're also coming from me. You see what I mean? And then necessarily and always the perfection of wisdom slides into compassion, bodhicitta, and the wish to save the world. You see, it always does. You fix your complaining girlfriend and then you're like, God damn, I could fix Afghanistan. You know, that's easier than her. You know, you know, it always slides into compassion. You always get this idea, pops up, ding, you know, I could use this on the whole world. You know? So the direct subject matter of the ancient teachings of the perfection of wisdom is emptiness and seeds and how to change things. That always slides into compassion. Because you start to get these ideas like, maybe I could change, you know, the budget, or maybe I could change the mafia in Russia or stuff like that. And you just get, weird stuff starts to happen. And you can change anything. And then you start, that's bodhicitta. So that's how the Lanren started. It started with the perfection. The Buddha invented the Lanren. Don't think it's some Tibetan thing. It's not Pabongka Buche or Kenra Buche or Chijan Buche. It's the Buddha. And it's not the Buddha, okay? I mean, he's just a kid. I mean, there are billions of Buddhas before that. And we can't even imagine where it started, who started it. You know, billions of planets, billions of enlightened beings. It's not some Tibetan thing. Okay? Anyway, the Lanren has come down historically from the Buddha in two great streams. The emptiness stream, fixing your girlfriend's criticizing, comes down through Nagarjuna. Okay? Arya Nagarjuna. Nagarjuna lived in 200 AD. Sometimes he's called the second Buddha. The teachings on emptiness had gotten, they kind of got lost. It happens through history, right? From time to time, ideas get, they start to wander off a little bit, you know? And people start explaining things wrong, or they don't get it. When you have a lineage which is 100 generations old, then stuff gets confused. So between the time of the Buddha and Nagarjuna, which was 700 years, things got a little weird on the emptiness side, which happens, which happened in the last couple hundred years. I mean, and then you have to clarify it again. So Nagarjuna did that, and we trace our lineage of emptiness back to Nagarjuna. So that stream of knowledge has come down to the Lanren through Nagarjuna. The emptiness side of things, the complaining girlfriend fix it methods, have come down through Nagarjuna. Okay? The compassion side has come down through Asanga and Maitreya from the middle of the 4th century, maybe 350 AD. And Asanga was taking dictation from Maitreya, who is the next Buddha in this world, the 4th Buddha of this eon. So those are the two great streams. The Lanren teachings are considered to have come down to us in two great streams. The emptiness stream coming down through the Nagarjuna, which is sometimes called the profound stream. And then there's the stream on, well, what do you do after you fix your girlfriend? And then you naturally start to want to fix big stuff, like the world, like war, or poverty, or hunger in the world. And that's bodhicitta, and that's love. And that stream has come down through Asanga and Maitreya from the 4th century. So we trace our current practice of the Lanren to those two great streams. And they were united in Tibet by Atisha, which is going to be the subject of a lot of the coming week. It's good to know where your stuff comes from, okay? It's just good. You think maybe it's a little boring now. I'm about to hit you with a lot of dates. Hopefully 10 o'clock will come before that. And it seems a little boring, and you're like, I don't care, you know, who wrote that commentary and that commentary. But later you will appreciate it. Later you will. You go to so many things. You go to so many classes. And my first yoga teachers, Lady Ruth and David Life and Sharon Gannon, they told me, whenever you travel, take a class. Just take a class, yoga class. Wherever you are, take a class. Some of them will be a disaster. You know? Some guy will hurt you. And then some of them, you'll discover some, like, beautiful magic guy, you know, teacher. So when we travel, we really try hard to go to a class wherever we are. So we were in Ukraine, we were in Kiev, we were out looking for Mrs. Hancock's stuff. We walked by Yoga Studio, and I'm like, God, that's a yoga studio. And then we're like, let's go there tomorrow, you know? And we got the schedule and we went the next day and we struggled. We went to one class and everybody was like, we don't speak English. You know, so we're like, that's okay, we'll just watch what you do. You know, the guy says, you cannot watch what I do. You know, he says, you'll never get it, you know? And then we said, yeah, just try it, you know? I'm like speaking broken Russian to this guy. And he's like, okay, you can try it, you know? And we go into the class, and he's like, oh my God, you know? He's awesome, totally awesome. And he's like, you cannot understand what I'm about to do. Here, walk behind me. Put your arms around my stomach. Hold my stomach. Feel what the organs are doing. And there's like, his muscles are going, bing, 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 bing. I'm like, wow, you know? And then he's like, I'll show you how to go, you know? And then we did this really weird thing, right? And it was beautiful. He was incredible. His name is Vadim, if you ever get to, he's on
Lisa. That's a Ukranky
street. That's a Ukranky street. We couldn't remember the name of the street we're living on, and it was less Ukranky, so we said less Ukranky. But they had these books on the wall, and they were, oh my God, they were so messed up. You know, they had all these, every weird book you could imagine, you know, because they don't have anything to compare you with yet. There haven't been enough teachers come to Ukraine yet to for them to distinguish between what's cuckoo and what's not cuckoo, you know. So there's everything, you know, there's like so-and-so on, you know, cosmic, you know, sex, and then they're over here, there's, you know, it's all like mixed up, you know, and you're not like that. You have a real lineage. You have a 2,500-year-old lineage, which is tight. You know, it was passed on tight, and it's strong, and it's alive. You know, and the Dalai Lama is just the most recent guy. You know, and it goes back. It goes back for 100 generations, and you should know a little bit about it. You shouldn't be lazy. You shouldn't, like, some guy shows up to your class and you're like, I don't know, there is some Tibetan guy, and before that some Indian guy. You know? You can be proud of your lineage. It's not like you're just shopping and you have all these weird book stuff on the wall, you know, that nobody, just some guy made up something, you know, this month or this year, and then next year it's going to be somebody else. You know? It's not like that. All right. There are three main forms that the Lama, there are three main ways of studying these subjects. You should know. There are three, we talked about two streams of content, but there are three streams of style. Okay? So the content has come down in two streams. The way of teaching that content has three manifestations. And you should know the three, and you should be able to replicate them at will, right? That's what a good teacher is. Some people will need style number one. Some people will need style number three. You should be a master of all three styles, okay? So here are the three styles. First one is called Shumbawa. Say Shumbawa.
Shumbawa.
Bawa means a person who follows X. You know? Shum means the five great classics of Buddhism. So there are five great books of Buddhism that we study in the monastery. Five great classics. And Shumbawa means someone who goes through a, like a Geshe course, like that. The ACI courses are Shumbawa. The 18 ACI courses are Shumbawa. These are meant for people of greater capacity. Okay? They can handle it. And they can handle 18 courses of study. For 25 years of study, you know, they're greater capacity. They get more detail, and they go through the five great books. What are the five great books? I don't want to bore you, and I don't want to overwhelm you, but I guess I should mention one if I can remember. It's what we study in the monastery for 25 years. So we spend the first 12 years on the Jewel of Realizations, Wuntogen, by a Sangha, 4th century. Subject matter is, you can say, lower middle man.
Then we spent 4 years on Majjhimika, middle way, and we studied that according to Chandrakirti, Master Chandrakirti, who was a descendant of the Majjhimika. Then we spend 2 years on Abhidhamma, which comes from the 4th century, and it was taught by Vasubandhu, Abhidhamma Kosha. My Lama taught it to us for almost 10 years. Then the 4th book is Vinaya Sutra, which is not a sutra. It's a commentary by Guna Prabha from about the 6th century. And then every year, during your studies, you spend 3 months on perceptual theory. How do we perceive things? And formal logic, thinking. How do you think straight? And we debate for 3 months straight. We debate that every year for 3 months straight. So that's based on Pramanavartika, the commentary on correct perception by Dharmakirti, Master Dharmakirti, from the, I think also around the 6th century, 7th century. So those are the 5 great books. Okay. And we spend, in the monastery, we spend 20 to 25 years on them. That's a Shambhava. Okay. That kind of person has a huge toolkit. You know, they go to Ukraine, somebody asks them a weird question, they say, aha. Yeah, yeah, somebody asked that back in... Somebody was asking me in Ukraine, you know, so what you say means everybody living in their head. Mm-hmm. The people around me also coming from me. I'm so lonely. You know, yeah, I'm the Naka. You know, yeah, I'm living by myself. And Naumi, Nagalame. I'm living in my head, you know. And then I said, no, no problem. Dharmakirti said, you know, 6th century. Then you can pull out, you know, Gyushin Drupa. He wrote a book called Other People Exist. You know, and it's not true. You know, they're coming from you, but as other people. And you can relate. You can have an interaction with them. You can argue with them. You can make love to them. They are separate from you. You're not living in your head. You know? But a Shambhava can pull that out of the hat. They can say, oh, that's the, yeah, I remember. We got taught that back in, you know, 2012. That's over here in my toolkit. A Shambhava has all that stuff already. Okay, that's Shambhava. Second one is called Lam Rimba. Lam Rim, technically speaking, is a synthesis of all the 5 great books, without mentioning the 5 great books much. Okay, it's a simplified version of the 5 great books. What we're doing now in the next 10 years is a simplified version of what we did in New York in the 90s. Okay? This is a simplification of the ACI courses. They're all in here, in a single book. The 5 great books are in the Lam Rim. And they're regurgitated to be comfortable for the common man. And you should know how to teach that also, right? You should. You might get into situations where I estimate that 1 in 10,000 people can study an ACI course. Lam Rim, you go up to about 1 in 5,000. So Lam Rim is more comfortable for people. It's more friendly, user-friendly. So that's Lam Rim. That's a style of teaching where you synthesize the great books and you don't overwhelm people. And it's maybe more appropriate. You should be able to do both. You should be able to do both. Okay? Then the third one is Dhammapada. Say Dhammapada.
Dhammapada.
Dhammapada. Dhammapada means teachings which are passed on through personal interaction with your heart lama, okay? Or your other lamas. You know? They are teachings which are passed on from the heart to the heart, oftentimes in personal situations. Like I always think of the Howard Johnsons just before he did the Delaware Bridge. So I had to drive Rinpoche to Washington, D.C. once a month for 15, 20 years. And
that was great because I had him trapped and I could ask him questions in the car. And then he would fall asleep on the New Jersey Turnpike. And then he wouldn't let me ask any questions. But when we hit Howard Johnson's, I would get like 1 good hour. I could ask him anything. And he couldn't get away. And there was nobody else there. So a lot of my knowledge comes from Howard Johnson's. It's probably, we should make a stupid there. But that's Dhammapada. That's like, and that's special. There's nothing like that. What happens between you and your Lama in private, or the things that are passed on by osmosis when you're in the airport in Oslo and you're all exhausted and somebody gets upset and, you know, magic happens. That's Dhammapada. That's the private advices of your personal teacher, teachers. It doesn't have to be your hard teacher, it could be the other one. Those are irreplaceable. Those are obviously the heart-changing ones. Those are, you know, cannot be done without. Simpa norm. What do you say? There's another word for that. Irreplaceable. You can't do without. You've got to have it. They give meaning to the other two approaches, the Shunbawa and the Larenma. They give meaning to those other approaches. They give a special, it's experience. It's your Lama's experience and how it rubs off on you personally. So you also have to learn that, and you have to learn to grant that. You see, if you're going to be a teacher, you've got to be able to pull out Dharmakirti's proof of other people. And then you've got to be able to, you know, sit down with a new audience and do some long learning together. And then you also have to be able to take somebody into a room and in 5 minutes, you know, do a download of the heart essence of all the lamas of history. Okay? In a hotel room in Kiev. When you've got jet lag. You know? And you want to eat. Okay, now you've got to be able to do that. So those three things you've got to learn. You've got to learn how to pass on the lineage in those three ways. Okay? Deal?
Yeah.
Then you're really useful to the world. Then you're really, you know, valuable. Then you're like valuable goods. If you can do all three, then you're good. The first one takes some time. The third one takes some love. The middle one takes some consideration for others who might get overwhelmed by the first and the third. All right.